Welcome to the Social Network Show. How do you feel about social technology and this connected, networked world we live in? Your host of the Social Network Show, Dr. J, interviews informed and entertaining guests to tackle the most pressing digital issues of interest to business professionals and nonprofit leaders, to parents and educators, and to anyone wondering where all this is taking us. And now, your host, experimental psychologist, Dr. Jane Karwoski.
Welcome to the National Crime Prevention Council series on the Social Network Show. I'm your host, Jane Karwoski, experimental psychologist, Dr. J. My co-host for the NCPC series is Michelle Boykins, Senior Director of Communications of the Washington, D.C. nonprofit, our National Crime Prevention Council, home of McGruff the Crime Dog. All month long for October, we're recognizing Crime Prevention Month, a chance for each of us to identify crime problems in our communities and work with law enforcement and other community members to resolve them. In today's show, we tackle the last theme of the month, preventing gang violence. We're joined by a guest today who has spent a lot of time working within law enforcement on gang violence, intelligence, prevention, and enforcement. Michelle, who is our honored guest of the show?
Well, Dr. J, it's a pleasure to introduce Tony Avendorf, who retired from law enforcement after a distinguished 40-year career. And during his career, he served with the Illinois Department of Corrections, Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, and the Prince George's County Police Department. And Tony was assigned to the Prince George's County Police Gang Intelligence Unit since its inception in 2005, and he was the gang unit's liaison to the Prince George's County School System, County Jail, and State Prison Systems. Tony was involved in numerous major gang investigations, most notably the Operation Mano Dura, the D.C. Sniper Investigation, Prince George's County Department of Corrections, Bloods and Black Guerrilla Family Investigation, and numerous other street-level investigations regarding local Washington, D.C. and Maryland street gangs. Tony was also part of a team of adult and juvenile probation officers that focused on parolees and probationers returning to their communities after incarceration. Tony, wow, you have had quite a career. Thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Well, Tony, you have no doubt seen a lot in your 40 years in law enforcement. Can you tell us how street gangs are different from other criminal groups, such as organized crime, motorcycle gangs, ideological groups, and prison gangs? What's the difference with street gangs?
Well, the difference between street gangs and organized crime and motorcycle gangs and ideology groups and prison gangs, and you must remember me being from Chicago, I'm very familiar with organized crime, having worked it for 3 years in the 70s. There's an organizational structure in every gang, every street gang, but street gangs are not focus so much on hierarchy anymore, as much as they are with the spur of the moment reaction. So that's the main difference. The outlaw motorcycle clubs and the ideology organizations, your extremist groups, and prison gangs, they thrive on their historical perspective and legacy more so.
Okay. So street gangs don't have the history, you might say. Some of them are new.
Well, I'm not saying that. It's interesting. You know, I could ask a street gang member to tell me the history of their particular gang or crew, and they would have no idea. And it was interesting because I would always tell them to go back and ask the older guys what the history was. So, you know, every gang mentality has their history. It's just that the street gangs and the way the street gangs are today, they lose the fact that they have a history. They're so involved in making money and doing things against society that they've kind of lost track of that. But you know, as I tell anybody that I teach or speak to at conferences, every street gang has a structure. Everyone. There's always somebody who calls the shots. There's always somebody who's an enforcer, and then there are your soldiers. So if you look at that dynamic, you know, there's a three-tier hierarchy, but it's not as openly recognized as if you would have a national president for the Bandidos Motorcycle Club. It's a little bit different.
Okay. So how extensive is the gang problem currently?
It's pretty extensive. I have the pleasure of going around the country. In fact, I'm speaking at a gang conference in Mississippi in a week and a half, and it's huge now because things are different. Things have changed since I retired 6 years ago. Things have changed in 1 year. And every time I travel, I see new trends with the gang problems. But you know, the crime that they're committing is extensive in the fact that they're now into white collar crimes that you don't associate street gangs with, like bank fraud or insurance fraud or mortgage fraud, things of that nature, credit card scams. You know, they most people look at street gangs as selling dope on the corner, as doing robberies or carjackings. But another caveat is that we don't even see the street gang members on the corner anymore. Everything is social media today. Mm. So, you have phones that act as computers. You have Facebook, you have Instagram, you have Twitter, and the gangs thrive off of the social media, and it's harder for law enforcement to really get a hold on it because they don't see them like they used to. So now that's why most of your major police departments or larger police departments have social media to try to keep up with the street gangs.
So your beat, it might be in cyberspace.
Oh, absolutely. And another extension of that is the female, the rise in female participation. You know, the theory years ago was that the females, they carry the weapons or they carry the dope for the males. They're slinging their own dope. They're doing stick-ups. So they have their own identity now, and before I retired, I was doing a lot of intelligence with the female components of the male gang, and then the female gangs that were separate from the male gang. So it's a pretty extensive network now.
Tony, are there female gangs just by themselves, or are they always a member of a male gang?
No, they're female gangs by themselves, and especially in the Washington, D.C. and Southern Maryland area, a lot of the female gangs originate out of high schools. And one thing I found out, between the difference between the male and the females is social media really plays on the females, because once something's said about somebody or member of their gang, they act on it immediately. It's, they don't wait like the males do sometimes, but they act right away. So, the female gang members can be as or more dangerous than the male gang members.
Hmm. Well, can you tell me what factors, going back a bit, contributed to the proliferation of youth gang activity in the 80s and 90s? Seems like that's when things...
Yeah, well, before we started the conversation, you know how far back I went, you know, as far as Dick Buck is. So I can pretty much speak, because I was active law enforcement in the 80s and in the 90s. But the one thing that stands out about the 80s was the advent of crack cocaine or rock cocaine. Once that hit the street, it gave the street gangs, especially the African-American street gangs, a venue for entrepreneurship. You know, I turn a lot of heads sometimes when I ask the question, do you look at a gang member / drug dealer as an entrepreneur? And people look at me like I'm crazy, but you have to realize that that's what they are. Mm-hmm. They're out there to make money. So they're using marketing skills And the primary skills of marketing is supply and demand. And they meet those requirements. So that's, and I remember when crack hit the street, and I remember how violence really shot up because of the effect and the money that crack cocaine brought to the gangs themselves. The 90s, where we're seeing a little bit different thing, where we're seeing the advent of the Mexican drug cartels.
Okay.
And they've pretty much taken over what the Colombians were doing after Pablo Escobar abruptly retired. However, we're also seeing an uptick in human trafficking. We're also seeing the advent of the Central American gangs, the MS-13s and the MARA-18s, and the fact that once we were able to start deporting these gang members back to Central America, it became worse over there because those gangs actually originated in Los Angeles, not in Central America. So that's what we started to see in the 80s and 90s, and it's continuing today.
Interesting. The cities that are hit with this the most, which cities do have the biggest problems, do you think?
I think all of them do. Yeah, and it's kind of interesting that since I do a lot of training in the South, I have the opportunity. I'm not going to really get into who's worse or who has, but you have cities like New Orleans and Atlanta and Birmingham and Jackson, Mississippi, that have gang issues. People tend to look at the larger cities like Chicago or Los Angeles or New York, and think that, you know, the major problems come out of there, but that's not true anymore for a long, yeah. But you know, if I can use the South as an example, you know, my father's family was from Alabama, but these are my father's side. So mm-hmm. there is a connection between Southern states, Mississippi, Alabama, Kentucky, Tennessee, to the Midwest.
Oh, right. You know, because of the northern.
Right. And it's just not Chicago. You've got Kansas City, St. Louis. Gary, Indiana used to be a thriving city because of steel. So, you look at the African-American migrations, and there right. was more than one. They, you know, these families moved north for a better opportunity. So, you know, there's a lot of consternation about the city of Chicago now. Why is Chicago so bad? It's always been violent. It's historically been violent. It was violent when I was growing up there. So, you know, people tend to think that this just happened yesterday. The one thing about Chicago gangs, which makes things worse today, especially with the African American gangs, is those gangs were run by people that I could go to and say, I need so and so. I need Flip. I got a warrant for him. They didn't want the heat that would be brought down if I had to go looking for Flip. Today, you don't have no shot callers anymore. They're either dead, they're in the penitentiary, and they don't have that strength they used to have. So these gangs now, these younger kids, this younger generation, and you know, they don't want to listen to anybody. They mm-hmm. don't want to be told what to do. So right. they've splintered, and now it's one neighborhood against another neighborhood. So there are several neighbors in Chicago that if I go get some I love rib tips. If I go get some rib tips, if I cross the street, I'm in another gang's neighborhood now. Whereas before, it was just one gang who ran that entire area. So, you know, I've learned that once I start talking about cities, you know, people get their feelings hurt, but they have to realize what's there and mm-hmm. what they're dealing with, and they have to come up with proactive ways of dealing with gangs. You just can't be reactive. You have to be proactive.
So in terms of, and maybe we can get into this in the second half here, I'm thinking about prevention, really, thinking about why young people join gangs. So let's do that in the second half. We're talking with Tony Avendorf, retired law enforcement and gang prevention expert, about the proliferation of gangs and what can be done to keep young people away from gang activity. In the second half of our show, Michelle will be asking Tony about gang violence prevention and intervention. You are listening to the NCPC series on the Social Network Show. I'm Dr. Jane Karwoski.
Questions? Comments? Reach out to us. Our email address is questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com or find us on Twitter @SocialNetShow.
People across the globe are tuning in to the podcast show Women Worldwide, with host Deirdre Breckenridge, as she highlights the adventures of her amazing guests, from neuroscientists and psychotherapists to movie executives and entrepreneurs. On the show, women share their incredible journeys filled with tough challenges and great achievements. They impart advice and educate through their personal experiences so that you can learn and grow and tap into your own inner strength and potential. Women Worldwide, like the Hashtag Show and the Social Network Show, are available on thesocialnetworkstation.com. Welcome back to the Social Network Show. I'm Jane Karwoski with my co-host Michelle Boykins of the National Crime Prevention Council. We are speaking with Tony Avendorf, noted gang prevention expert. So let's shift focus for the second half of the show and talk about gang violence prevention and intervention.
Well, Dr. J, I think that you had gotten into a really good discussion with Tony, and it made me want to ask the question, why do people join gangs, Tony? What are those community conditions that enable youth gangs to take root?
Well, it all depends where you are, Michelle, because, you know, I can go into very middle-class, upper-middle-class, wealthy neighborhoods, and they've got gang activity. And these are the kids that live in those areas. So a lot of people like to throw the socioeconomic thing as the main reason for gang activity, and that's not entirely true. You know, I could go on and on and on about why males or why females join gangs, but I'll throw off four or five reasons, the ones that I pretty much feel that affect us today. One of the things I would do when I would interview gang members or debrief them, you know, I would ask after they got through lying to me, telling me that they weren't a gang member, and then we got all that straight. You know, then, you know, I would ask them, well, why did you join? And one of the things that stuck out with both males and females was the gang provided them family structure. So you have to look back to see who you're dealing with here. And a lot of these gang members didn't have two parents like I was blessed to have, or they had a single parent trying to take care of them and several siblings at the same time. When they met the gang members and the gang members recruited them, and there's various ways of recruiting, but they provided something that these folks didn't have as far as in their own family. And then you have to look at the fact that, you know, you have a lot of gang members whose family members are also gang members. And, you know, I could, especially with the Latino gangs, you could go generations, four or five generations back to the great-grandfather being a gang member back in the 1900s or in the 1920s or so. So family structure is very, very important. A second one is protection. It's interesting, especially when I'm training police officers and I'm talking about their safety. One of the questions I always ask police officers is, how many of you have never been in a fight before? And you'd be surprised how many police officers have never been in a fight before they became a police officer. And it's the same way on the street. If you don't fight well and you're constantly bullied by other people, then you get tired of being bullied. You get tired of getting your butt beat. So you join the gang for protection, just to go back and forth to school, to go to the store, things of that nature. Respect is another one, and that's something that's been going on ever since I was a kid growing up on the south side of Chicago, and I was part of that problem when I was a kid. I got a lot of fights. I fought all the time, and I was part of a gang. The one thing that kept me kind of centered was I had a father who I was scared of. So that kind of kept me centered as to what I did with them when I was with them. But I also had I was a fairly good student and I was a good athlete. So those are the things that kind of kept me away from a lot of the guys who did things that they later regretted and went to jail in high school. So, you know, it was all about respect, you know, who, you know, it got to a point where, you know, you get into so many fights, people from other neighborhoods come over to your neighborhood just to fight you. It was respect. So that's a thing that still exists today. And money, it's huge today. Everybody wants to make money. So, you know, McDonald's is not an option anymore. I mean, you know,
well,
I
it's not just
case.
Money, it's fast money, right?
Oh, it's fast money. I had a case where this kid actually was trying to get away from the gang members. So he got a job at a McDonald's here in Prince George's County, and rival gang members from another neighborhood went into that McDonald's and saw him and actually started a fight with him inside the McDonald's. Well, when the police came, you know, they separated them and they didn't lock anybody up. 2 days later, there was a major drive-by shooting where fortunately nobody was hit. But when I got there and other members of the gang unit got there, there were three different caliber rounds laying on the floor on the ground. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that can, you know, this kid was really trying. I got to give him credit. I mean, I know him. I've helped kids get jobs, you know, but I think it's important to realize those things, especially money. Now, it's all about money. Everything's about money, 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 money.
I wanted to step in because you were talking about this young man who was trying to get himself together, trying to step away from the gang. Are there specific steps that you walk young people through, or, you know, you talk about when you're trying to, quote unquote, reform a gang member?
Well, yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, I think some people that I grew up with will tell you I still haven't been reformed, even though I had a 40-year law enforcement career. But I think I think it has a lot to do with if I'm talking to a gang member and I can see in their face they don't want to do this anymore, then I'll start talking about other alternatives. So the gang member has to want to do right. The gang member has to want to be better, or I'm not going to go to bat for them. There's an MS-13 gang member that came to me one day and says, I want to get away, but I'm afraid. So I got him a job, and I got him a job for a well-known company that sells lumber and home stuff. You might have heard of them. And I lost track of it. I retired. And a couple years ago, I go into a store in near where I live, and MS-13 had given me a name. And it was, the name was Viejo. Now, that means the old one. And I didn't take it personal because some of the guys I worked with were called other names that weren't very nice. But the one thing I learned about Central American customs is they respect age and rank. Well, good Lord, I had both. So they would always call me Viejo. Well, I hear this, Viejo, is that you? And I turn around, and it's this guy that I got the job for years ago. He's a manager now.
That's fantastic.
So, you know, he showed me pictures of his wife, his kids, had tears in his eyes, and, you know, he almost made me cry, you know, and those are the kinds of things, you know, I had opportunities back in the 50s and 60s. The same opportunities kids have today. It's just the fact that I took those opportunities because I had a father who would probably kill me himself if I did something really stupid. So, today, a lot of these kids don't have that father figure that you respected and that you were also afraid of. So those are the kinds of things. So much, they weren't so much afraid of me out here on the street, but they respected me because I would talk to them and I would listen to them. And,
Well, my impression, Tony, of many African-American youth is that they do have a lot of respect for their mothers.
Oh, absolutely, and more so for their grandmothers. But the thing is, you know, let's say I would arrest Johnny, and Johnny's a member of a particular street gang here in Prince George's County, and I found some weed on Johnny, or I saw Johnny selling the weed. Well, you know, I would contact the mother, and the mother would come to the station in a rage because how could I, you know, I planted that on her son, or her son wouldn't do anything like that. But yet and still, if you do some research, you find out that mom just got a brand new car. How'd she get it? 'Cause she got brand new furniture, things of that nature. And, you know, so a lot of these single parents, they have a tough job. But I found out a lot of them know exactly what's going on. They know exactly what their child is doing or their brother or sister is doing out here. And because it's a further way of income, they accept it.
Well, you certainly aren't going to make enough at McDonald's to supplement the family income. But I'm curious about that with the two cases you mentioned. Do you think that the fact that you found a job for the fellow that did manage to become the manager of the home improvement store, was it because it was possibly a higher paying job or not just a fast food job that might have helped?
No, I think at that point he just wanted to get away from the constant
harassment.
Well, not so much harassment, but you have to realize, you know, gangs like MS-13, they thrive on violence. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the mottos, you know, of MS-13 is jail, the hospital, and the cemetery, three places they believe that they're going to go as gang members. So you don't have a lot of leeway there. So when you're dealing with somebody who has a mindset or who has been led to believe that that's what's going to happen to you, the majority of them do take that seriously. But then you find kids or young adults who want to make something out of themselves. And I think, this kid, wanted to do that. And I would listen to what he had to say. Yeah, he had to be careful because if they saw me talking to him, they want to know what we were talking about with the other gang members. So there was a fear there that they would jump him or beat him because he was seen talking to me. You know, but I had an incident happen to me when I was 16 where a gang member picked a fight with me, pulled a knife out on me, and I took the knife and I tried to stab him with it. I missed. It went to the ground, and I beat him for about, I guess, a minute or so. I can remember my neighbor looking at his watch and then finally getting tired of it and pulling me off of him. But my father, I kind of like to say, my father deported me from Chicago to Los Angeles to stay with my grandparents because he thought that James's gang was going to come after me. I kept trying to tell my father it's not going to happen, but you didn't quite tell my father that, those kinds of things. So I spent my entire junior year in Los Angeles. I was really liking it out there. It was different, you know, and then all of a sudden, after my junior year, he tells me, you're coming home. So I didn't ask why, because you didn't ask why. When I came home, I found out that the kid that I got into the fight with had been killed. And in my father's mind, I was going to be okay. So, you know, those are the kinds of things. And then after that, that turned me around. you know, I started getting, you know, more into my studies. You know, my father told me, well, you know, you're going to have to get a baseball scholarship, son, because I can't send you to school. So I wound up getting that and getting out of Chicago, and the rest is history. So, you know, those are the important things. If you have the, you know, a lot of police officers don't realize it's their job to actually help people. Mm-hmm. They really don't. So, if you can be a coach of a kid's team or a mentor to somebody, I always encourage them to do that. It's not going to hurt you. Yeah. And you find out that people actually respect you for trying to help them.
Uh-huh. Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, this has been so interesting. And thank you so much, Tony, for joining us today.
Well, I had fun.
and for
one of you who happens to be a Mets fan, it ain't over until the last out of the ninth inning. So
that is true, but we do have a lead, Tony. We've got a lead.
You got to remember, I've dealt with the goat, the black cat, Bartman, all kinds of things that have happened to the Cubs since I can remember being a Cub fan. So, hey, you know, I take this one day at a time.
Absolutely.
Does it make sense to say good luck to both of you?
You're welcome.
Not a lot.
You can stay impartial, Dr. J. Stay impartial.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again, Tony. And thanks, Michelle, for bringing Tony to us. And he's with TA Associates. It's been a real pleasure doing this series with you, with the National Crime Prevention Council.
You as well. I appreciate it.
Of course, the highlight was having McGruff join us. I'm going to memorize that URL for that show because... That's my favorite. Well, thank you, everyone, too, for listening to the Social Network Show. And you learn more about, for instance, this time, gang prevention trainings. And you can learn more about Tony at tonyavendorf.com. And that's ends with a PH, not an F, by the way, Avendorf. Thank you for listening, and I would love to hear from you. The email address is questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. I hope you will want to recommend the Social Network Show to others curious about the internet and society issues. Remember, you can get the Social Network Show app for the iPhone or the Android at the iTunes Store or Google Play. Please have fun and be safe, online and off, until we meet you here again.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the worldwide show dedicated to social media networking and understanding the connected, networked world we live in. Listen to our archive shows on thesocialnetworkshow.com and follow us on Twitter at Social Net Show. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia Incorporated. The views and opinions expressed are those of our host and guest and may not be the views and opinions of Social Network Intermedia.